Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Follow Your Path. My name is Abdul Abid, and I'm a surgical pathology fellow at University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. And today, we will be talking to Dr. Liron Pantanowicz. He is a professor of pathology at University of Michigan, and his specialties include cytopathology and informatics. I'm also joined today by a future pathologist, Meredith Herman. Welcome to the show, Dr. Pantanowicz.
Thank you, Abdul and Meredith. I'm happy to be at and starting a dialogue with you.
So starting off, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, where you went to medical school, and your residency?
Yeah, so I grew up in South Africa many years ago and started medicine there and headed towards a journey of doing pathology. My wife wanted us to relocate to Boston, and so I relocated to Boston, and then I started over with an anatomical and clinical pathology residency at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Harvard, and went on to do two fellowships, a hemopath, cytopath. When I started, there wasn't such a thing as a clinical informatic fellowship, and then I graduated and got my first job offer with Bay State Medical Center, which was affiliated with the Tufts healthcare system.
That's wonderful. So can you tell us a little bit more about how you got involved with informatics? Anyone who you met, like mentorship, or anyone who kind of helped guide you towards this career path?
Yeah, that's a great question. So obviously when I started as a resident in pathology, the field of pathology informatics really wasn't well defined, and there certainly weren't official fellowships around, nor was there a component of pathology informatics embedded into the pathology curriculum. But when I arrived in Boston coming from South Africa, it struck me the disparity of a low income country like South Africa in what kind of resources they have relative to the US. In other words, there were electronic medical records. In South Africa, everything was virtually paper-based. Data was retrievable from these systems. People started to dabble a little bit in digital imaging, like converting an autopsy suite to having a digital camera. And in South Africa, you know, I'd never realized how difficult it was not to have access to data and what that kind of data can do for you. So I perhaps was one of the only residents who saw the value in data, computer systems, and applying that to practical things in pathology. There was a pathologist working there at the time, and his name was Dr. Bruce Beckwith. And of course, he was super excited that one of the residents was not just interested in looking down the microscope, but was actually interested in data and computers. And Bruce at the time was on the CAP's informatics committee. It wasn't really called an informatics committee back in the day. I think it was called a DIHET committee. It had the word IT in it. And so the resident I joined as one of the resident delegates on the committee. And that way I got to meet most of the people in the US who were really involved in pathology informatics. And so I built up a network and we, you know, got involved in several projects with the CAP. And throughout my residency, both on the AP and the CP side, I kind of got involved in a lot of the pathology informatics initiatives, helping with digital cameras in the gross room, collecting, you know, stuff from the LIS and submitting projects to the AACR on chemistry, etc. And I guess through apprenticeship, I was studying pathology informatics. And so that's how I got involved in pathology informatics. And then again, when I went into my fellowships, I was always called upon to handle AV equipment, imaging stuff, and LIS troubleshooting. And so I became the IT guy. And even when I got my first job, I was hired as a besides practicing cytopathology and search path and even doing blood banking at the time, they made me director of pathology informatics. Mm-hmm. And what was quite interesting was I asked them, what do I need to do as the director of pathology informatics? And they had no idea. So I had to write my own job description. They just knew it was important. And so I actually wrote my own job description for that component of my job. And you know, that's how I got started in a career of pathology informatics.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So in your opinion, if you were talking to a medical student who is going into pathology or a junior resident who may end up choosing informatics as a career, what would you tell them? What makes informatics so unique?
Yeah, so informatics has become a pillar of healthcare and certainly in pathology. We talk about AP, CP, now molecular, but really you can't do any of that today without informatics. It's the backbone of practicing pathology today. And what's happening is many of the areas in pathology are becoming increasingly dependent on informatics, and that requires people with certain knowledge and expertise in that area. At the same time, you know, there's been an initiative to have folks get board certification in this area. And what will happen over time is, and it is already happening now, is many pathology departments, whether they are in academia, reference labs, or even in private practice, all require someone with informatics expertise. And what will happen over time is they may eventually insist that you need to be board certified to practice in that area. So it's key. Now, what I often tell people when they get involved in informatics is only 10% of that job really is technical. Most people think it's a very technical job. But to be honest, 10% is technical, which is the IT part, the digital imaging part. The other 90%, which people realize when pathology informatics fellows graduate, they realize, oops, there's this other 90% of the job no one told me about, which is the politics related to the people and the processes. So it's okay to understand the technical stuff, but that technical stuff, when you want to use it in pathology labs, means people have to use the technology, and usually they're resistant to change, and you become a change agent, and you deal with all of those politics, and you usually are changing work processes, initially changing from a manual to a digital. You're asking people to change or add steps or remove steps, and so you're completely changing workflow. And so that becomes 90% of the job. And the technical piece, although that's the most fun part of the job for most people in informatics, sometimes get burned out or freaked out by the 90% of the politics involved.
Definitely. There, it's very apparent that informatics is, you know, the way of the future practice of pathology and how we do things. So we usually ask about an interesting case that you've worked up, but it seems more fitting perhaps to ask, you know, how has informatics helped with working up an interesting case that you've seen or, you know, come to a diagnosis that if it weren't there, you know, we couldn't reach that conclusion. So can you share a little bit with us a story about that?
Yeah. So, many pathologists, you know, they get very involved in their cases and they take individual cases seriously. Let's take a surgical pathologist they want to make sure they get the right diagnosis and maybe, you know, work it up with ancillary studies, maybe get a second opinion because they want to make sure the diagnosis is right, because at the end of the day, no one wants to harm a patient.
Right.
But as a practicing anatomical pathologist or clinical pathologist, many times if you're going to make a mistake, you're going to harm one patient at a time. Mm. That's very different in informatics. And he has a case in example where that's important. So when people get blood work for clotting disorders, even if they're on a blood thinner, like, you know, heparin, warfarin, etc., it's important that the INR get tracked. And the INR is calculated, and the calculation is a simple one to do, but usually that calculation is done by the computer system in a lab information system. Now, when people do upgrades or change reagents, etc., it's important that they need to know the algorithm needs to be a change to that simple calculation and needs to be validated. There was a scenario where the people involved in a change in their lab did not pay attention to simple, you know, informatics principles, which is, you know, all changes need to be validated. You need to understand that, you know, computer systems are not going to understand and know what to do unless you tell them and make the change and validate that that happens. And so what happened was an omission to have the calculation done properly. And that meant that thousands of patients had the incorrect INR results. And in that case scenario, many patients were harmed because they were either over or undertreated. So you can imagine if someone is overtreated, any minor injury can cause a brain bleed, etc. And therefore, what I tell people is, yes, while a surgical pathologist may harm one patient at a time if they don't know what they're doing, a pathology informaticist will harm thousands of patients through something like this if they don't know what they're doing. So taking from that case, I do not advocate that anyone should practice informatics. Certainly, everyone should understand informatics, but it should really be done by someone who's skilled and understands this and, you know, and especially has experience to avoid harming so many patients.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah. The scope that you were saying, the damage that can be done by one computer mistake, it's much more than if you just get one, for example, diagnosis wrong. So definitely. So as someone who does clinical informatics, what do you think is the most gratifying aspect of your job?
Well, you know, I think as a pathologist, and as all of us, and for the pathologists listening to your podcast, what we like is the challenge, even, you know, for difficult cases. Well, what's the diagnosis? Let me order some tests, and then you get the answer right, and you help the patient. So we like challenges, and it's exactly the same when you practice pathology informatics. There's always challenges in the lab. Not enough people to do the job, so you need more efficiency. Workflows not working well, so you need to readjust things and automate stuff. The manual way of doing things it's not good anymore, it's not reproducible, we can't get a precise result, so let's do it by image analysis. And so that's the best part about this, is tackling problems in the lab to make us better, but using technology and leveraging that to solve the problem, which is what pathologists have always done over time. Several years ago, a fellow and myself, the fellow's name is Sung Park, we contacted pathologists on every continent and almost in every country, and we interviewed them to give us their account of the history of pathology informatics in their country. And it was amazing that at the end of the day, when we synthesized that information, what we found out was that everyone faced the same problems, which is there's always going to be some problem in the lab. People will always resort to technology to try and get them to solve that problem. And they'll always run into the same challenge, which are the IT infrastructure in their labs not good enough to accept this new technology. It costs a lot of money, so now you have to justify using it to get a return on investment. And then you will always run into some regulatory hurdles, either it's FDA or you know, whatever the other regulation is required in that country. And it was the same story told around the world over and over time. And so the most exciting thing is that finding that technology and applying it to the practice of pathology every day. And we're undergoing that now with digital pathology, right? So especially post-COVID, a lot of us are burnt out. People want to work from home. What if the next pandemic arrives? We're not prepared. So we need to get onto a digital platform. So, you know, how do we solve that problem? We need to get onto a virtual platform to do that. And the silver lining is, if you're on a virtual platform, guess what? You can start to have apps that can do artificial intelligence and start to use them and so on. So, you know, I think you can be creative in your job if you know how to apply technology successfully.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that is really exciting to see how digital pathology is, you know, being so integrated into our, you know, the pathology practice. So so can you share with us, we're shifting gears here to talk about, you know, the training to get into informatics. So what is the training like for this particular area in pathology?
Well, there are formal fellowships around the country in the U.S., not too many, but they're available. And the Association for Pathology Informatics, API, lists on their website many of these fellowships. Some take one or two fellows. The fellowships maybe 1 or 2 years. Some of the fellowships are ACGME accredited, and some are not. And that has some bearing on if you want to be board certified or not. For many years, many of the fellowships were not ACGME accredited, and it was okay to do a fellowship and still be able to be eligible to take the board exam because there was what's called the practice pathway. So if you did a non-ACGME accredited fellowship in path informatics, up until 2025, I think, it's still okay and you can take the boards. There's some requirements along the way to still satisfy. But if you do the ACGME accredited fellowship, and there are several around the country now, UPMC, for example, just recently received ACGME accreditation for, I think, 4 slots. So if you choose to do their fellowship, you'll be ACGME accredited, and then that's a direct pathway to be able to take the board exam. And now the board exam is usually designed and administered and handled by the what's called the ABMS, the American Board of Medical Specialties, except for pathologists. We have to be the exception to the rule because we're exceptional, right? So that's handled specifically by our own board, which is the American Board of Pathology. But in unison with the ABMS, the ABP, the American Board of Pathology, will check that you meet requirements to take the board, and then they will handle your examination, and they will be the ones to issue you a certificate should you pass.
So for any residents or incoming residents who have just matched, and if they're interested in informatics, what advice would you have for them? Like, what should they focus on in their residency? And are there any resources that you can share with us?
Yeah. So first, you don't have to head down a career path where you want to do a pathology informatics fellowship and just do full-time pathology informatics in practice if you really love blood banking, heme path, search path, right? So, but I do think it's important to be knowledgeable about path informatics because it will make you a better pathologist in the area you're in. So if you're a hematopathologist and you know more about informatics related to that field, you'll be a better hematopathologist. For example, if you're looking down a microscope and you know nothing about a microscope, how to do color illumination, polarize, you just won't be good at your job. But if you are a master of your tools, which is the microscope, you'll be better at your job. So informatics should be approached in a similar fashion. And there's the PIER curriculum now, the PIER, Pathology Informatics Essentials for Residents. And so that now gives most residents a roadmap of what information they need to know to be competent to practice. But for those people who really want to actually make pathology informatics a career and may even want to apply to a fellowship, what I would suggest is there's a lot of free stuff that can help you, one, get involved in the field, buff up your CV so it looks good, and start networking early on. And so societies that are involved in that, for example, API, the Association of Pathology Informatics, membership's free for trainees. The DPA, which is the Digital Pathology Association, membership is also free for those societies. Those societies usually link up trainees to mentors, and so I would start making those kind of connections, meeting people at national meetings, apply for some of the travel awards. There are many travel awards that are available, and most residents don't take advantage of that, and that will get you involved in the pathology informatics community, which is still relatively small in the US, and so we all know each other, and so when there's someone new, we will pay attention to that, which usually will guarantee you a slot in a fellowship program. And I would suggest, just like any other area in pathology, is pick a project that you can focus on. I'm always a proponent of double dipping and working smart. So let's say you want to become a cytopathologist, and you may want to do pathology informatics afterwards, which is what I did. You can do a project in cytopathology that involves informatics. So, speak to the place where you're training and tell them maybe you want to do a telecytology project. And that way you're double dipping. So should you want to do the cytopath fellowship, it counts. And should you want to do the informatics fellowship, the telepathology part counts. So that's what I would recommend that residents do to set you up for the next step in your career.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. And like you just mentioned, cytopathology, and I will be doing a cytopathology fellowship next year. So we have seen In surgical pathology, digital signouts is some places have started doing it, other places are slowly implementing it. Is there, other than telecytology, is there a digital cytology platform that are coming up? Or since I'm sure you would know more because you are in both fields.
Yeah. So when people talk about, you know, doing primary diagnosis for digital, using digital pathology, that really means you're looking at the digital image only and not the glass slide.
Right.
For now, that really applies mostly to surgical pathology because you don't need to focus in more than one plane. Mm. However, with cytopathology, that's a little bit more challenging because you're not taking sections of the smears or the fusions unless you make a cell block. So you need to be able to focus up and down, and that's what we call the Z-axis. And many of the scanners today have incorporated what's called Z-scanning to accommodate that, but it's not very practical for routine practice. And it's a pain in the butt to screen those slides. So, you know, think about trying to go through 200,000 cells on a pap smear. A mouse, right? We're all going to land up with carpal tunnel. Abdul, by the end of your fellowship, you'll have carpal tunnel if we did that to you. So we've been waiting for a digital cytology specific platform to address this. And there are three on the market that are commercially available now. One of them in the USA is provided by the company Hologic, and their system is called the Genius System. Just for the listeners of the podcast, I have no conflict with that company. I wish they would pay me, but they don't pay me anything. So what that system is, the Genius system has its own whole slide scanner, specifically designed mostly for thin preps with PAPs. And then they have an artificial intelligence algorithm analyze all the cells. And then, you know, they present it to you and it helps you interpret the case so that you can put it into the Bethesda system for reporting cervical cytology. There are not too many of these around the world now. There are a few in labs at the University of Michigan. We have one, and we've just completed our validation. But we're all waiting for FDA clearance for this system. So there is finally a system out there that you can use now for digital cytology. So if you say your lab's gone fully digital, you can include cytology in that. And the hope is, Abdul, that over time, non-GYN cytology can be added to that, maybe even surgical pathology can be added to that, and so we can start to use more AI apps.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. Oh, yeah. I was just a few days ago, I was looking on Twitter, and a resident probably in South Africa had given a talk somewhere, and they were talking about that now there are AI systems that can do thyroid cytopathology, for example. They can do that, and urine cytology. So that is something that is definitely coming up. I know that this is still like that is in research stage, but soon the AI systems are going to be powerful enough once we do get digital cytology to sort of like do the almost the job of a cytotechnologist. From that perspective, do you think the cytotechnology world would we still need them, or like
benefit? I think so. I think yes. The current system, for example, that Hologic provides, the Genius, includes the cytotechnologist in the workflow. So the cytotechnologist still can log on and review the case first, and then select the cells that they think are important. So when a pathologist subsequently reviews the case, they don't have to look at many more. They can look at even the smaller subset just screened and annotated by the cytotechnologist. We could get to the point where, you know, cytotechnologists don't need pathologists to review cases. Of course, that will always be contentious because there's billing involved in that, so no one wants to give up billing. Yeah. And of course, with AI, we could get to the point where, you know, where AI screens the cases and we don't need humans involved at all, maybe for the negative cases. So if a PAP test is screened and it's negative, and that's what AI says, we don't need a pathologist to review it or a cytotech. I'm hoping to pay off my mortgage before that happens, but we'll see. It may come sooner than that.
Yeah, Meredith, do you have any questions?
I guess, is there anything up and coming in the world of informatics that we should be paying special attention to, especially people, you know, like myself or, you know, current residents who will be entering the workforce? What should we be looking out for?
Yeah, so the key things are, you know, There are very mature societies and associations which are there to provide you educational content and network, and you should take advantage of that. Number two is, the lab information system itself is changing a lot. Everyone used to have the best of breed, but we're now having systems that are incorporated into bigger modules of EMRs like Epic Beaker. And so a lot of labs are changing that way. We have digital pathology, of course, which we've discussed a little bit about. And then coupled with that is artificial intelligence. Another exciting area is computational pathology, really using computers to analyze data, and not necessarily only from images, but raw data that could come from molecular testing and just big data from the lab in general. And, you know, with that, the velocity of data and the volume of data and the complexity of data we're generating today, most humans cannot really interpret that. And so we're really going to rely on computers to assist us, one for business intelligence purposes, but also to make some discoveries. For those of you who want to remain in academia, you will probably not land up doing your research looking down a microscope trying to discover something new, but I suspect you will be morphed into a data scientist who will be looking at large amounts of data and looking at for trends and making new discoveries, whether it's about cells or pathology processes, or even at the population level. So we're going to be changed into data scientists. So best we be prepared for the era of computational pathology.
Oh, that's great. That's very exciting.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Pantanowicz. That's our show today. For today, folks, you can find Dr. Pantanowicz on Twitter. His Twitter handle is @BathPro. And thank you very much for listening to us. If you like the show, please like and subscribe to our channels on YouTube, Apple, and Podbean. And we'll be back for another episode soon.
Special thank you to our listeners. Until next time, enjoy an excerpt from an upcoming interview with Dr. Joe Chafin, aka the Blood Bank Guy.
Doing clinical pathology residency, what I realized was that the experiences that I had had as a clinician, if you will, quote unquote, because I was an intern, as I said, but the experiences that I had doing that shaped me as a pathologist. It helped me understand these things that I'm saying, these things that I'm writing on a surgical pathology report, these things that I'm saying to people when I'm consulting in transfusion medicine or microbiology or whatever in clinical pathology, this has impact. This has real consequences and real meaning to the people that are on the receiving end of this. And I think for me, it was the best thing that I could have ever done, was to spend an extra year doing clinical work before I went into pathology, because it really helped me understand exactly how to be a better pathologist and communicate better to clinicians. And I think it's also partly, Abdul, what helped me on my road to transfusion medicine. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes, but the interplay of clinic day-to-day direct patient care, along with what goes on in the laboratory, is kind of what drew me to transfusion medicine.